Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today, our series of debates for the general election on November 5th continues. Today, we hear from the candidates running for state senate in the Plymouth and Barnstable district. The district includes the towns of Bourne, Falmouth, Mashpee, and Sandwich in Barnstable County, and Kingston, Pembroke, Plymouth, and Plimpton in Plymouth County. Reminder of our format, we have our candidates have up to 2 minutes to answer questions on issues and up to 2 minutes for closing comments at the end, and we will alternate who answers first. The candidates are Dylan Fernandez. He's the Democrat in the race. Hi, Dylan.
Good to be with you.
And Matthew Muratori. He's the Republican in the candidate. Hi.
Hey, nice thanks for having us.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
We'll start with Dylan Fernandez. Dylan, affordable housing, a big issue on the minds of many in the district. Your thoughts on how we tackle this problem that we've been working on for as long as I've been doing this
show. Yeah. Well, look, this is a huge crisis that's impacting our district. You know, a lot of people can't afford a home here. It's impacting working families, people, young people, seniors. And it's not just being able to afford a home. Rents are incredibly high as well, that a lot of people are spending 50%, sometimes more, of their salary just on rent. Fortunately, there's good news on this. We passed the Affordable Homes Act a couple months ago. This is the largest housing bill in a generation. It does a lot to support housing programs and rent subsidies and incentives to build, and it's an all-above approach to bring down housing costs here. It also strengthens individual property rights for allowing ADUs and has some funding for veterans housing as well. And then we carved out a specific component for the Cape called the Seasonal Communities Designation, which creates an office in state government that will issue specific regulations for the unique housing needs of our region. And that's really important because our region is different from others. It is unique. And then there's also a component here to allow municipalities to directly fund housing for municipal employees. So for our teachers, our firefighters, our police officers, it's a really good bill. There's a distinction in this race. I'm the only person who voted to support the Affordable Homes Act. Matt is the only person, Democrat or Republican, in the entire region to vote against it. So real distinction in the race. I think it's so important that we're supporting housing and meeting the need around our housing crisis.
Thank you. Matthew Muratori, same question.
Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah, it is a good bill. Once we were able to read it after the vote, and the reason I didn't vote for it is because at 4:30 in the morning on August 1st, when we were asked to vote for this, we didn't have the text in front of us, so we couldn't even read what the bill was actually about. But after reading it, yeah, it absolutely makes a lot of sense. We're about 200,000 units behind where we should be in the Commonwealth for units, but this of housing, but this will help go on a long way. You know, the other thing that I always look at, too, is you know, for the affordability of seniors. We're losing a lot of seniors out of Massachusetts. It's not affordable for them to live here anymore. We're losing young people as well. So we need more workforce housing as well. A lot of young people come here to go to the universities and colleges, great universities and colleges, best in the country, and yet they can't afford to stay. Even my own children, I have six daughters. Some of them can't afford to live on their own. And either rent by themselves or actually afford to buy something. So I do think this is going to help in an awful lot of ways. I also think, too, we need to look at abandoned buildings throughout the Commonwealth as well and just see what we can do to help restore those into housing units as well. And if there's a way that we as the Commonwealth can actually help with some of those buildings, particularly, and I'm in the nursing home assisted living field, and there's a lot of those that are vacant, open, need to be probably closed, that can be turned into some units.
Thank you. All right, Matthew Muratori, we start with you this time. Yeah. There are many small businesses in the district, and I'm sure they would want to know what your plan is for economic development.
Yeah, sure. So I am a small business owner. I have been for years. I owned child daycare centers for 20 years. So I know how to do, make payroll, pay taxes, and help grow jobs for people. I'm also a business owner in a firm called EF Senior Care, where we do consulting for assisted livings and nursing homes. So I think the backbone of our economy are small businesses, and we need to do some more tax incentives, tax breaks for them in a lot of various areas. We did a billion-dollar tax cut bill back in early 2023, which I think was good, but I think we need to do some more, and particularly around small businesses.
Thank you. Dylan Fernandez, same question.
Yeah, I grew up in a small business family. My father, mother, and stepfather all own small businesses. And you start work at a very young age when you grow up in a small business family. So small businesses are vital to the Cape and Islands, to this entire region. They are, supply the workforce for a lot of the jobs here. We need to support them. I was also voted in favor of the tax bill, largest tax reform in a generation. It's a good bill. And we worked to get specific components in there to lower costs. One big piece we did was around the septic tax credit, which is specific it applies to the whole state, but actually was specific to our area because we have a lot of septic tanks in this region that are putting nitrogen into our water. We tripled that tax credit to $18,000, and now you get a zero interest loan on top of that. That really saves homeowners and others money when it comes to replacing septic tanks. And then we got to focus on where we're good in our economy and really deliver more on that. That means supporting more around tourism. We have a vibrant tourism economy here. Massachusetts does a really poor job of supporting it. If you look at Colorado, you look at New York, you look at a lot of other states, they put a lot more money into marketing their tourism industry than we do here. We need to change that here in Massachusetts, and that's something I'm going to fight for. We also need to be promoting our blue economy and our blue economy jobs, whether that's right here in Woods Hole with the local scientific institutions or with aquaculture and our fishing industry. You know, these are ways we need to be promoting economic development.
All right, thank you. Dylan Fernandez, we had that unfortunate issue with the turbine blade at the Vineyard Wind Project that collapsed into the Atlantic Ocean and the debris washed ashore on area beaches. Has this changed your position on wind power, and how do we prevent future problems like this?
Well, the GE blade failure off Nantucket was a total disaster, and GE needs to be on the hook for fully compensating the town of Nantucket, fully compensating anyone that was impacted by this. GE, it's their blades. They were the contractor to install them. And they should be on the hook here. To Vineyard Wind's credit, they hired American here and went with GE when they could have gone with, the other companies that are European based. But look, global warming is an existential threat to our region. We live on a sandbar in the middle of the Atlantic. We've seen the power increased storms have on damage. And we just saw that recently with Helene, and we see that here with sea level rise that's happening. There's a lot of places on the Cape and Islands today where just at high tide, there's flooding. And so without any storm. So we need to do our part when it comes to tackling the climate crisis. Really important that we're doing our part. And unfortunately, we don't have the sun resources to do it all with solar. I wish we did. I love the sun. I love our summers. But, it gets dark at 4 o'clock in the winter. So we need other options as well. Wind has to be a part of it. It just does. And the good part about wind is for our often overlooked area, it's bringing in a lot of jobs. So we got the operation and maintenance facility on the Vineyard, 60 to 70 good paying year round jobs. Vineyard Wind's created over 2,000 jobs just on this project in this region, which is so important because we are, a place that's overlooked. A lot of the, biotech and all that stuff, a lot of those incentives go to Boston. We finally have a place where we can incentivize jobs here, and you're seeing that through our local community colleges as well.
Thank you. Matthew Moratori, same question.
Yeah, that was disastrous to see that, and unfortunate. And I think what I'd like to see is us kind of slow down right now, and let's evaluate where we're at. Ironically, the week that happened, we were presented in the House with a climate change bill, which is, I think, was bad timing. And so I, along with other colleagues, have voted against that climate change bill for that reason, because I think we need to put it on hold until we actually look at this, because there are going to be more blades that are going to be dropping into the ocean as well. There's no doubt about it. They've already said there are a number of blades that they have to be looking at and assessing. But also, I think we still need local control, and we need the local municipalities. As a former municipal leader, I used to be on the select board in Plymouth. I think we actually need, you know, local control, the local municipalities involved in decision making of these things as well. Again, putting a hold on it for now for the wind. For the wind turbines is a priority for us that we should be doing. But yes, with regard to the coastal resilience, and we're losing a lot of our shoreline. So I represent the town of Plymouth, and we have 33 miles of shoreline. And then you look down here on the Cape as well. And we need to be able to do some more for that. But going back to the wind turbines too, there's other things that get associated with this, and that's the cost of the cleanups as well, and that still needs to be addressed as well. I talked to the Falmouth town manager a month or two ago about this, and it's not just on Nantucket or the Vineyard; it's actually on our shores here that it's washing up and there's cleanup, and there's no funding for that. So we really need to be looking at this before we continue.
Thank you. Next question, we'll start with you, Matthew Moratori. I'd like to know your thoughts on water quality. We have the issues with the estuaries and bays, but also, as we talked about, drinking water. So your thoughts kind of broadly here on keeping or improving our water quality.
Yeah, that's one of our most precious resources is water. We need to do everything we can to protect that. Matter of fact, last evening, we hosted an event in South Plymouth. There's a development called the Ponds of Plymouth with 900 homes in it. And it's on well water. And there's been problems with it. I actually live in the area as well. So we hosted an event with the company as well as DEP. We had DEP come down because there's staining of the water, there's smell of the water. There's a lot of issues with it that really haven't been addressed, and they keep flushing the hydrants and say, oh, that's going to take care of it. And then people complain again, and then they flush the hydrants again. There needs to be more done. And so we've asked DEP to get more involved and really help come up with a plan for the communities on how to on the water issues.
All right, thank you. Dylan, same question.
We need to protect our water resources in this area across the Cape and Islands. It is not only why I love it here so much, why we love it here, our pristine beaches and waterways, but it's also our biggest economic driver, the biggest driver of our tourism industry. That's why, millions of people come here every year, and that's what actually supports our small businesses. And so, when I first got elected, we worked with the Cape Cod Chamber. I got an award for them on this work with the Cape delegation in creating the Cape and Islands Water Protection Fund. This is a huge deal. This is a carve out specifically for our region, and we've been really successful in getting legislation passed that is, Cape and Islands specific. And so this creates a $1 billion fund over the next 30 years to support water quality on the Cape. And it's a huge deal. And we worked with the business community to do that. We worked with our bipartisan delegation to get it done. And so that's really an important piece, but we got to do more. One part of that, as I mentioned, is the septic tax credit that we've been really successful on getting. But there's more to do. And this is not just about a water quality issue. It's also an economic driver. And, it's sad to say, but several beaches across the Cape were closed over the summer. That really impacts our tourism industry. I've been a leader on environmental issues in the state legislature. I vice chair the committee on the environment, currently passed several bills around environmental protection. And this is one of the most delicate and beautiful areas. I think it's the most delicate and beautiful in the world, and we need someone who's going to preserve it.
Thank you. We are talking with the candidates running for State Senate in the Plymouth and Barnstable District. 866-999-4626 is our number. If you have a question, we ask that you have an issue-oriented question addressed to both candidates, 866-999-4626, or you can send your question to thepoint@capeandislands.org, and we'll have more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking with the candidates running for state senate in the Plymouth and Barnstable District. The candidates are Dylan Fernandez and Matthew Moratori. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Margot is calling from Sandwich. Hi, Margot.
Good morning.
What's your question for the candidates?
I want to thank you for having this forum, but I also wanted to ask the candidates who each of them is intending to support for president, to vote for president, which I'm guessing, you know, we probably think we know the answer to that, but you never know.
All right.
And also why.
Like, all right. Who are you voting for and why? All right. Thank you, Margot. Dylan, your turn to go first.
Yeah, this is a relatively easy question for me. I'm voting for Kamala Harris. I think for a number of reasons. Women's reproductive freedom is under attack in this country, and we've seen how the Trump administration, basically worked to end Roe v. Wade and take away women's rights. Women should have control over healthcare decisions about their own bodies. Any decision about their own bodies. That to me is pretty fundamental. And so, whether it's, climate change that we talked about, helping kids with college, all these big issues, those are on the ballot this year at the presidential level. And probably, really importantly for our region, there's no bigger issue than that of the Cape Bridges and getting funding for them. We've been successful in getting funding for the Sagamore Bridge under the Biden administration, in part because of the infrastructure legislation that they passed. I do not see a Trump administration sending a couple billion dollars to the blue state of Massachusetts to fund our Bourne Bridge. And so I think this is a really, really important election, yes, for our values and standing up for women's rights, but also for the future of our transportation, because decisions made in the next 4 years around the Cape Bridges, the Bourne in particular, will determine the fate of our region for the next century.
Thank you. Matthew Moratori, same question.
Yeah, so I was a supporter of Nikki Haley when she was running for president, so I'll just get that out there now. But I think folks are tired of hearing about D.C. politics and national politics, and I'm not one that is dealing with that. I want to deal with the issues here in Plymouth County and the Upper Cape here. And I think no matter who's in the White House, I think promoting economic opportunities, solving the migrant crisis here, and transparency in government, I think, is what people are looking at and what people are talking about. So it doesn't matter who's going to be in the presidency. That's what I'm going to be focused on as a state senator here in this district.
All right. We're going to start with you this time, Matthew Moratori. This is another listener question. What steps would you take to develop and implement policies that support the sustainability of arts organizations?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. I was actually on the Arts and Tourism Committee through the state as a state rep for 8 years. And so we've done an awful lot. Again, I only represent one community right now as a state rep. I represent the town of Plymouth. And so we've been able to get millions and millions of dollars for them. One of the things we did is we promoted a cultural district. I think we were number 14th for cultural districts in the Commonwealth. And then we're able to get to some funding for that. We have a lot of historical buildings in Plymouth, too, that we're able to get funding for to help transform. One of them is the Spire Center in downtown Plymouth. That was over 100-year building and is now a performing arts center. That's beautiful. There's programming there, 3 or 4 nights a week. Big proponent of that. It also, by promoting arts and tourism, it actually helps with the economy as well. I don't think people think of it that way, but when we've been able to build up the arts and tourism in Plymouth, it's helped out with the restaurants and gas stations and everything else that goes on with people coming to the town. So it's vitally important. It's obviously vitally important to the folks down here in the Cape as well. I used to live in Falmouth. My wife is from Falmouth, so we spend a lot of time down in the Cape as well, and we'll continue to hopefully fund more. And I do agree that we need to actually promote Massachusetts more, and particularly the Cape in this region, because I think it's a beautiful area. We have a lot to offer. And I hope to, if I am the state senator, I'm going to be the number one committee I want to be on. It's arts and tourism.
Thank you. Dylan Fernandez, same question.
Well, I grew up in an artist family. My mother's a potter, and right here in town, Flying Pig Pottery. I know how important our arts and culture is to the region, not just from an economic perspective. And we have some of the most incredible art and cultural resources here, whether it's, the symphony or the various art groups. We have incredible arts foundation here that's supportive of all of them. We've really become a destination for arts and culture in the world, and we need to do a better job of promoting that to people and attracting people here, not just for our beaches, but also promoting us as a cultural destination. The state needs to do more on that. I was actually the vice chair of the Tourism, Arts, and Cultural Committee, where I traveled around all over the Cape and islands, and then also all over the state to hear from artist families about how we can help them. One component of this is around the Affordable Homes Act, and specifically, pushing for pieces around artist housing. That's something we can explore doing in the seasonal communities designation. A lot of times artists move into a community that's actually kind of undervalued. And then because of their art and the community they create, the home values go up, they can no longer afford to live there. We should be thinking about artist housing and housing for people in all different mediums. So it's something I grew up in, and an area that I want to continue to support at the state level.
All right. Dylan Fernandez, we'll start with you this time. This is a question from Karen in Woods Hole. What have you done to protect access to reproductive health?
When I first got elected back in 2016, there was no access for women's reproductive care on the Cape and on Martha's Vineyard. In fact, for a lot of women, the closest place to get to have abortion access was actually in Providence, Rhode Island. So a level of access to care you'd see in like a Mississippi or an Alabama, especially when it comes to women on the vineyard who'd have to take a ferry. That's hundreds of dollars, take days off work. You're coming from Provincetown, same thing, days, a day or two off work, hundreds of dollars just to get, basic reproductive care. And so we worked with Health Imperatives, and then through the legislature, we created a fund and worked with Health Imperatives so that just last summer, for the first time, women on the Cape and on the Vineyard have access to reproductive care. That's a really, really important piece for our region. And, I'm someone who's always going to support a woman's right to control the decisions about her own body. That's a bit of a distinction in the race. My opponent voted against the Roe Act. I voted for the Roe Act. This was legislation in preparation for the Supreme Court striking down Roe v. Wade. We needed to take off old antiquated laws from the statutes in Massachusetts and codify Roe in the state. And it's a good thing we did that because, just several months later, the Supreme Court, extremist Supreme Court, struck down Roe v. Wade.
Thank you. Matthew Motori, same question.
Yeah, so I'm a father of six daughters. So we have these conversations a lot and over the years. And it's very important to protect, protect their choices and what they want. Just a clarification, too, on what my opponent just said, is that in 2022, when the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, within weeks, we, the state, codified Roe v. Wade. And I was a yes vote on that because I do believe we need to keep Roe v. Wade in place here in Massachusetts. What he's talking about is the Roe Act, I believe, from 2020, where it reduced it reduced the age of from 18 to 16-year-olds without parental consent. And that's what I objected to on that bill. I think it's, you know, if health care is important, and I think a parent's decision in health care, no matter what the health care is, should be until they're 18 years old. So that was the reason for that.
Thank
Sorry,
you.
That's just factually inaccurate. So in 2020, we passed the Roe Act, which stripped away all these antiquated laws from the books and then codified Roe. That was done as a budget amendment in December of 2020. That is the Roe Act. That was in preparation for the Supreme Court striking it down. If we didn't do that when the Supreme Court struck down the Roe v. Wade, we would have been thrown into chaos like other states were across the nation on this. There's a bill we did after that called the SHIELD Act that Matt did vote for, but that was not about Roe. That was about protecting providers of health care, nurses, doctors, who provide that care to
patients.
Do
you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, again, just they are different bills, and that's just to clarify. The reason I turned down the 2020, well, there's one reason why, and it's because it changed the age from 18 to 16.
Thank you, Matthew Mottori. We start with you this time. This is a question from Roger in Falmouth. Medical aid in dying permits hospice-eligible, capable adults to receive a prescription from their physicians to take if they decide that their suffering is intolerable and to die in their sleep. The issue has been well debated in the legislature press and has wide acceptance as an option at the end of life. What is your position on this issue and why?
Yeah, not sure I have a position on it yet. It's something that we really haven't debated it. It really hasn't come up in the House chamber at all. It may have been in committee, but not in the House chamber. I think I may have even talked to Roger about this at one point as well. Yeah. So he's really, you know, helped me with this, understand it. There's obviously two sides to this. And I understand, you know, why people would want to do that. I think we just need to hear more of the debate and really the final bill. For me, it's always about looking at what's in the bill. You know, like I said, on the housing bill, I didn't vote for it because we didn't have a bill to read. So you really need to have the full bill and what actually it's going to be in it so we can have the debate and discussion about it. But I do see both sides of it and can understand why people do want it. And I also understand the other side of it, too, is that, you know, the hesitation of people that maybe don't want it, you know, because of, you know, maybe there is a miracle out there that can help them in certain ways because medicine is changing all the time. But I do understand both sides. But I really want to see, you know, a final bill before we actually do debate that. But we haven't had that yet.
Thank you. Dylan?
Yeah. No, I do know Roger from who's done this work for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always been supportive of the legislation. I don't think that anyone should have to needlessly suffer at the end of their life. There's a lot of people who are terminally ill. I you know, have family friends who've gone through this, and it was just a really harrowing experience watching their loved one really suffer in the final days of their life. And this is just an option. It's just an option. It's a choice for the very small number of people who want this. They can have it. And for a lot of people, it's comfort too, to know that if things get really bad with cancer or whatever disease it might be, that you won't have to spend your last days in excruciating pain. So I support this. The bill is actually, it's been around for a while. That went to a ballot question in 2012 and it's been filed for years and years. And it's done a lot to create safeguards around having a psych evaluation. It takes into consideration, you know, the disability community that was raised as concerns years ago. So the bill in its current form, really puts a lot of safeguards around it too, and allows people to die at the end of their life with dignity. And I think that's really important. I would want that option. Again, just an option. I would want that at the end of my life. And I think for people who want that, they should have it as an option.
Thank you. Dylan Fernandez, we start with you this time. We're seeing mental health challenges on the rise, and access to treatment is a huge issue in our region. Any thoughts on how to make it more accessible?
Yeah, this is a big issue. My my family's worked in this for a number of years. My stepfather's was a counselor at Gosnell, then Recovering Champions, and opened up his own practice. And we just this past summer, celebrated his 40th year of sobriety, which is a really big deal. And so, you know, growing up on the Cape, I have lost a lot of friends and people I've known to the opioid epidemic. In fact, there's a kid I played lacrosse with on my 2016 campaign literature who has passed away since from opioid overdose and leaves behind a family. And then in East Falmouth, at one school has seen 12 parents die in 4 years. This is a huge epidemic. We need to do a lot more. We, as a state, spend $1 billion a year on this. A lot of that goes to different forms of healthcare, whether that's beds and treatment, to expanding mental health. We've expanded mental health in my time in the legislature in really big ways. We did this big Behavioral Health Act a few years ago. We really expanded access to care virtually through telemedicine. But look, we also have a lot more work to do. The next step on this, I think, is more tools around harm reduction. One reason we've seen a decrease in overdose deaths is because of the availability of Narcan that we've also made free and available to people. So we need to give people the supports they need. And, you know, we've been doing that, but there's always more to do.
Thank you. Matthew Motori, same question.
Yeah, so I've been in healthcare my entire career, and this is the main reason I actually ran in 2014 for state rep, is to deal with this. And it's personal to me as well. One of my six daughters, struggles with it and has for, a couple of decades. And so we see the issues firsthand. And I was thrilled to be a part of creating some of the legislation around the mental health bill that Dylan talked about that we passed, I think it was maybe 3 years ago, that does give more access. It's looking to get more beds. It's looking to get more treatment options. And more importantly, it's getting to get more people into the industry, the workers that we need, the social workers, the councils, et cetera. And we need more of that. So I think that was a good first step, particularly for children, because children's mental health, as we know, is it's always been out there. But I think it really exploded during COVID. So this was so needed. And as Dylan touched upon with Narcan and overdoses, overdoses are still happening. And because the deaths have gone down, it's because of Narcan that they've gone down. But we still need to be able to treat people that are addicted, because I believe it's all part of mental health. And the more we can get more counselors and workers involved, whether we have to, pay their tuition or reimburse their loans or whatever, but we need more good qualified people in this realm to deal with that. I was proud to be part of a group that started a recovery center in Plymouth several years ago with Bob Hollis and former Senate President Therese Murray, and it's thriving now. Just in there recently, and it's doing some great programming for people. So, and we do need to do more.
Thank you. We are hearing from the candidates running for state senate in the Plymouth and Barnstable district. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We ask it to be an issue-oriented question directed at both candidates, and we'll have more after quick break. You're listening to The Point. We have the candidates running for state senate in the Plymouth and Barnstable district with us this morning. They are Dylan Fernandez and Matthew Moratori. 866-999-4626 is our number if you have an issue-oriented question for the candidates. You can also send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. I've got a couple of questions relating to climate change, and I know we touched on it. Rosemary in North Falmouth says, do you believe climate change is a threat, and what have you done or would you do about it? Matthew Moratori, we start with you.
It's a threat. Climate change is real, and as we talked about, just look at the beach erosion that's happening along our beach shores. It's a true threat, I've supported several bills over the past. Did not support this last climate change bill, as I said, for those reasons, but there are a lot of good things in it, and but I think, again, going back to the whole wind thing, that we just need to kind of put a pause on that until we can really check that out. But yes, it absolutely is a threat.
And do you want to elaborate on any of the other, like maybe coastal resilience, the ideas or things that you'd like to propose or
work Well, on? I think we propose a lot of things. I think there could be some more things that can be looked at. But again, that coastal erosion, I think, is probably the biggest threat that we actually have. It's also an economic threat as well, because when you start losing value on homes that are on the coastline, that affects the municipalities and the tax base, et cetera, in the communities. And we've seen that in Plymouth. I live in South Plymouth, 5 minutes from the Sagamore Bridge, and we have beaches along Cedarville there and homes that are along the cliff there. We had a person a couple of years ago that had to sell their house that was probably worth $1.5 million, but sold it for $500,000 because they lost about 200 feet of their backyard, and they only had like 50 feet left over the last several years. So we need to look at the regulations, the federal areas and state regulations, and see how do we balance these with Mother Nature and how it's going to go with the helping to save some of these properties.
Thank you. Dylan Fernandez.
Yeah, climate change is an existential threat to the Cape and Islands. It's probably the biggest issue that future generations are going to face. And so we need to do our part to address it. When I first got elected in 2016, Donald Trump got elected the same night. One of the first things that he did was pull the country out of the Paris Climate Agreement. The big international and important agreement to address this issue. And one of the first bills I filed, and the first bill I got passed through the House, was legislation signing Massachusetts onto the Paris Agreement, sending a message that this handful of climate deniers in Washington, D.C., don't speak for the people of the Plymouth and Barnstable region, don't speak for the people of the Commonwealth. And so, we need to address this. And it's also about coastal resiliency. Massachusetts can get to net zero tomorrow, and still the sea levels are going to rise somewhere between 2 to 6 feet. The storms are going to get worse. So we need to be proactive in what we're doing on adaptation and mitigation. And that means creating a program, which we did in the legislature, called the Municipal Vulnerability Preparedness MVP plan, to give communities the tools they need to assess vulnerable areas. And then once they've done that, it opens them up for grants. The first part in terms of coastal resiliency is nature-based solutions. And we're doing that here on the Cape. We need to do more of it here and everywhere, around restoring our estuaries, restoring rivers, restoring herring runs. So as the water gets higher, it goes into these nature-based places and not the streets.
All right, Dylan Fernandez, we start with you this time. Human trafficking is a larger problem in our region than many realize, not only sex trafficking, but forced labor. Your thoughts? I know the district attorney's office in Barnstable is really focusing on this, but your thoughts on what the legislature can do to help?
Well, we can do more to strengthen laws there, and we've actually done some of this recently in terms of strengthening some of the penalties around human trafficking, sex trafficking, other types of trafficking. Before I came into the legislature, I worked in the Attorney General's office. This was a huge focus of the AG's office at the time, and it continues to be. Andrea Campbell, someone who's focused on this quite a bit as well, and have had conversations with our local DA, who's a supporter of mine in this race, around how we can improve it. We need to do more to support women as well, and we see that here. Not just around trafficking issues, but also around domestic violence issues. There's a great home in Falmouth that helps women just here locally, and there's several across the Cape. You'd be shocked to know the numbers of women that go through there and need that support. It is incredibly high. They are full a lot of the time. And so we need to be supportive of women. As a guy, we need to call out how unacceptable it is to treat women in that way. And, you know, I think when it comes to some funding support from the legislature, we need to put more funding towards shelters and towards other resources that help women get out of those situations and recover from them.
Thank you. Matthew Motori, same question.
Yeah, it's horrifying. Again, as a father of six daughters, it's horrifying to see what's really out there. And people I don't think really know a lot that really happens around it in this area. And I was fortunate to be on the Human Trafficking Task Force in Plymouth County. I was appointed to that a few years ago and by DA Tim Cruz, who's a supporter of mine as well. The stories that you hear, you don't realize they're happening in your backyard. So we do need to do more as a state legislator as well to help with this. We need more laws around this. We need. I know we did the revenge porn law just not too long ago, which was, you know, which is a huge thing. But we need to do more. But people, I think the key is people need to be able to talk about it more. And we do need to get more shelters, and we do need to get more funding to get them out of the situations they're in. But we need people to talk about it more. They're living in your neighborhoods in a lot of cases. And this is one of the biggest things I learned that I was shocked about, is that, you know, a lot of this human trafficking is happening in neighborhoods, you know, on the Cape, on the Plymouth County area. And, you know, if you see, you know, unusual activity happening in a home, you really should, you know, call upon somebody, you know, the local authorities to take a look at what's happening there. But we do need to do a lot more protections, and I think the people in the communities can actually help with this as well. But yes, we need to do more in the state level as well.
All right, thank you. Matthew Motori, we start with you this time. We're seeing more interest in working from home following the pandemic, but our broadband infrastructure is spotty. Thoughts on how we can improve that?
Yeah, it's awful. And again, I think this is where the state needs to come in and help out with. It's a great option for people to be able to work at home. And I really, you know, support that if businesses want to do that, to be able to do that. But you do need the tools to do that. And broadband internet is relatively important. It's very important to it. And so whatever we can do to help strengthen that within the community, absolutely be all for it.
Thank you. Same question, Dylan.
Yeah, if we want to have and be economically competitive as a region now and in the future, we need to have access to high-speed internet. I've long been a supporter of this. We actually, when Falmouth, it was a few years ago, but Falmouth Main Street, the internet went out during summer. I think it was either July or August, I forget which month. But these are businesses, and it went out for several days. And these are businesses that only have a few weeks out of the year to make their money to be profitable for the whole season. That was a disaster. And so the next year, I worked actually with Vinny DiMacito, who was the state senator at the time. I secured in the House, Vinny in the Senate, funding and in terms of budget amendments to go directly towards downtown Falmouth being able to get on to high-speed internet. We actually have... And so now they have that access. We actually have high-speed internet running through kind of the backbone of the Cape, if you will, in terms of Open Cape. There is a fiber network there that is available. We need to be able to tap into that. That takes money and resources. I got the town of Falmouth $100,000 to explore how they might be able to tap into that. Now there's exploration of whether Falmouth wants to create its own kind of municipal broadband network. And that's something that's being explored currently. The state has put a lot of money into Western Mass on this, and to, you know, which is understandable because some places in Western Mass didn't have any internet. So I get that that's the first step. That's covered now. The next step is making sure that here on the Cape and Islands, we are getting that last mile of internet, and we need that for our economic competitiveness.
All right. We're going to move into closing statements now, and Dylan, it is your turn to go first, and I'll give you 2:15 because we got a few extra seconds. So
wow.
You have 2 minutes and 15 seconds.
Well, thank you, Mindy, for hosting. Thank you to my Republican opponent, Matt, for joining as well. I'm Dylan Fernandez. I'm a lifelong resident of our district. I grew up here. My family came from Portugal 4 generations ago. They worked as strawberry farmers on the Cape. My father started a small business and worked his way out of poverty, and I became a first-generation college student, studying economics in undergrad, getting a master's in public administration from Harvard. And so I got involved in public service to give back to the community and country that I love and that has given me so much. And I've brought that energy for helping others to the legislature, where I passed 30 laws, brought reproductive health care for women to our region. And I've been a leader on preserving our environment and passing bills to protect clean water. You know, I'm a local high school and school graduate from public schools, and I'm from a small business family here. So I know how important it is to support public education and housing for local residents. Women's reproductive freedom is under attack in this country. And as we mentioned earlier, you know, I'm the only candidate who supported the Roe Act to protect women's ability to make health decisions about their own bodies. And, you know, we have a housing crisis here as well. And as we talked about earlier, I'm the only candidate that voted to support the Affordable Homes Act, which is crucial for our region. And so we need someone who can deliver for us. Decisions made in our district in the next few years will decide our fate for the next century, especially around Holtec, especially around the Cape Bridges, the biggest infrastructure project in the country, bridge infrastructure project. And so we have a lot of work ahead. We need someone who can bring energy to this. And I was born here, raised here. I think it's the most beautiful place on earth, and we must preserve it. And I want everyone who lives here to have the same opportunities I've had. So I humbly ask for your vote this November.
Thank you, Matthew Mottori.
Yeah, thank you, Mindy, so much for having us here and having this discussion. And thank you to WCAI and The Point for doing this. Again, as a husband and a father of six daughters and a grandfather as well of a three-year-old granddaughter, you know, we've been born and raised in this area, but my wife and I grew up in the South Shore. She grew up in Falmouth. Her family's still here in Falmouth. We both started our careers here in Falmouth and loved the Cape area very much. She started as an elder law attorney and still is, but up in Plymouth now. I started as a nursing home administrator on Jones Road, and I still do have my license as a nursing home administrator. And so we love the whole area and really would love to represent this area as well as a state senator. Currently, I serve on several boards and organizations, including PAC-TV, BID Plymouth Hospital, the Rotary Club, and Plymouth Area Chamber of Commerce, to name a few. Also on the Plymouth Area Regional Economic Foundation, where we're putting on our third annual Blue Economy Conference that's coming up in 2 weeks. I wanted to promote that a little bit. I've been a state rep again for 10 years. I've been on the Small Business Administration Committee, as well as the Municipality and Regional Government, House Ways and Means, and Healthcare Finance. I just recorded my 2000th vote, so I have almost 100% voting record in the House. And I built the relationships across the aisle, and which is important because there are so many issues that we need to tackle, such as solving the migrant crisis, creating tax cuts to make masks more affordable and competitive, increasing mental health, increasing tax incentives that we talked about for small businesses, and protecting our environment in Cape Cod Bay. There's so much work to do, and I ask for your vote on November 5th, so that it can continue to be your voice and advocate for the needs of the residents in Pembroke, Plimpton, Kingston, Plymouth, Sandwich, Bourne, Falmouth, and Mashpee. And together, let us keep progress moving. And thank you for your consideration.
Thank you so much. And if you missed any of this morning's program, you can catch it on our website, as all the debates are there, at capeandislands.org. Thank you both, Matthew Mottori and Dylan Fernandez. Thanks for being here and letting our listeners know where you stand on the issues. We really appreciate that.
Thank you,
Mindy.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.